Quest for Truth, Episode 270.
Quest for Truth, presented by Protectorate Productions and HPN, Helsley Podcast Network. Now located at life-truth.com. And now, here are your hosts. Oh, come on, do I really have to read this? Those world-famous ministers of goodwill, Keith Helsley and Nathan Caldwell.
Welcome, everyone. This is your host, Keith, and it is time once again for the Quest for Truth podcast. And who was that guy anyway?
Oh, who am I? I'm Anthony Russo. I'm the host of Grace and Peace Radio. You can listen to my podcast over at graceandpeaceradio.com.
It's the new voice of our podcast. And thanks a lot for being a good sport with presenting that.
I'd really like to set the world on fire, starting with my contract.
Now, I do want to keep my comments very short. This will be a longer episode. Before I get started, I have a really important announcement on behalf of the Christian podcast community, strivingforeternity.org.
This is Andrew Rappaport with Striving for Eternity Ministries. Are you cooped up at home? Are you just desiring to use your time wisely? Well, Justin Peters and I got together and realized that our calendars were cleared because of COVID-19. So we decided we would get together and do our Snatch Them from the Flames seminar, Home Edition. That's right, a free seminar, May 30th, from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. We're going to give you a free seminar that you can take at home. We're going to cover the topics of the sufficiency of Scripture, interpreting Scripture, discerning false teachers, identifying false teachers, and then a Q&A. Get all the details at strivingforeternity.org, and there you can go to the online events to register before May 30th, and we'll see you there online in your home.
And again, Andrew Rappaport and Justin Peters will be the presenters. It is totally free. All you have to do is visit strivingforeternity.org and register. And I hope to see you there because I sure plan on being there. Now, with all that said, because the second part of my commands of Christ got a little bit wonky because the file couldn't be found, I have a special presentation, Commands by Nathan Caldwell. Wait, Commands of Jesus, presented by Nathan Caldwell. That should sound better. Here we go. Commands of Christ, presented by Nathan Caldwell.
When Jesus said, "Go ye therefore, teach all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Ghost, and then teaching them to observe." Well, of course, that mentions baptism, and I think that is a very important commandment, Keith.
That was Commands of Christ, presented by Nathan Caldwell. Now, here we go with our main topic, an interview I had with Troy Frazier. Take it away.
Main topic.
All right. This is, of course, Keith, and with me on a Zoom connection today, I have a special interview with one of our fellow Christian podcast community podcasters. It's Troy Frazier from the Revived Thoughts podcast.
Hey, thank you for having me on, Keith.
All right. Well, I really appreciate you responding and being on the show. And yeah. I really enjoy your podcast, actually.
Awesome.
I've been listening to it, since the beginning of the year, probably. And yeah, you guys do a really good job. It's really
we've been putting out episodes for about a year. So if you've been listening for about a year, that's since the very beginning.
Well, since the beginning of this year.
Oh, okay. So yeah, that makes sense. Though when we first launched, we were very, very small. So I would have been surprised if you found us back in May.
I may have maybe crossed paths, as it were, as early as that, because we're also, I'm sure, part of the Christian Podcast Community Facebook group. And I know the podcasters there will share their latest episodes once a week. Mm. And it's possible I may have listened to an early episode, because I do try to listen to other folks' stuff. But for sure, in the last few months, I definitely have been. To get things started, I have a couple of questions for you. Do you want to do just a general question, or do you want to do a question about your podcast?
Either one is fine with me. I'm more than happy to answer a general question or a podcast question, where we can jump straight into it if you want, or we can talk about.
Right. I have some icebreaker questions, that's why I ask. And I was just wondering if you pick a number between 1 and 100, we can get a random question going on here.
15.
Oh. This is a would you rather question.
Okay, hit me.
15, you say?
Yes.
For your birthday, would you rather receive cash or gifts?
Would I rather receive cash or a gift? Honestly, I'd probably rather receive cash, even though it's kind of the it's not the very proper, polite thing to do. But I still feel like I'd kind of rather receive cash at the end of the day in general.
Yeah.
It's just more useful. I can use it for a lot more things. Like, I don't feel as much stress. But it had to be a really, you know, a really thoughtful, really good gift. And even the most thoughtful or sentimental gift, I'll put it on a shelf and kind of forget about it. So, but get cash.
and cash, that's not a bad answer, because it is more flexible. I would agree.
Yeah. Because you'd hate to put all this thought into something and it's just like, oh, thanks for the trash. I'm not going to use that. Or, oh, it doesn't fit. Or, you know, there's so many things that can go wrong with a gift. But with cash, I can go get what I want, and I will probably make myself plenty happy.
Yeah, those are good points. I like that. Because in the past, I have bought my wife an outfit, and it's like, this is really cool. It's just her color, just her everything, except for size. I'm like,
oh. Yes. Oh, no, yeah. Shopping for the missus is the most difficult thing you can pretty much do, if you ask me. Especially clothes are fashionable. I always have a very, very hard time, very challenging time making sure I get just the right present for her.
Yeah. I don't do a lot of shopping these days anymore. But when I can, I do. On the cash side, again, gifts for the wife. I remember I was stationed in the Marine Corps out at Camp Pendleton, and it was coming up on a birthday. It's like, hey, I'm going to send you $50. And what I want you to do is just go get something, you know, wild, crazy, you know, something you wouldn't normally buy for yourself, jewelry, perfume, whatever. Mm-hmm. And just tell me what you got. And she comes back, I'm sorry, I hope you don't mind, I spent it on a bill. I'm like,
yeah.
I guess you can do that. It's your birthday, buddy. But you know, I was hoping you do something more frivolous.
I mean, on the one hand, it's like, well, it's your birthday money. That's not the most exciting thing. But on the other hand, it's like, if that's what makes you feel better, I guess that's okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's her choice. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, those are some interesting things. But I thought I would open up with that. When I've done interviews, I always try to find a question like that to get things going. You learn a little bit about
it. Icebreaker. Yeah.
But so let's transition over to your podcast. Now, I know Andrew Rappaport has interviewed you, and you actually got an award through his podcast community. And so tell us a little bit about how you decided to do revive thoughts, and what exactly does that mean?
Yeah, our show Revive Thoughts is it's basically the sermon. It's a podcast that takes sermons from the past and we record them into audio. So we realize that there are all these great sermons from history by these really great speakers like Jonathan Edwards and Charles Spurgeon and Dietrich Bonhoeffer and all these great, wonderful. You can't listen to their sermons anymore because obviously they were, you know, preached before audio was really a thing. And so all these great preachers have books, and you can go to a, you know, a Christian bookstore and you'll see sermons by Charles Spurgeon, sermons by Jonathan Edwards. You'll see their works, but there's no way to listen to them. And I think getting them is wonderful, but we realize that there's a real need to get these to audio, to get these into people's ears. I always use the same way of explaining it, but I think it just makes sense that if I told you, hey, do you want to go to my house and read the latest movie script for, you know, some hot movie coming out, maybe Avengers or something, I don't know, what, you know, whatever's out, right? Do you want to go read that? You're going to go, probably not. That sounds a little weird. But if I said, hey, I got, you know, extra ticket. You want to go see a movie? Oh, you know, yeah, sure. Why not, right? I might go see a movie. Because movies are meant to be, well, I'm going to go read them. That's just kind of strange. In the same way, these sermons were preached. They weren't to be heard. And so our goal is to bring them back to spoken again so that people can hear them, they can understand them, they can appreciate them like they have in the past. And by doing that, by giving them that audio and giving them that breath of life, we've heard a lot of people be like, whoa, I cannot believe how relevant this sermon from 300, 400, over 1,000. We have sermons all the way back to Origen, and they go, I can't believe how relevant this feels to my faith today.
Now, and I was going to ask, what was your oldest sermon you've done? And I guess that would be Origen. Just for our listeners' sake, just how old is that?
Origen would have was born around 180, so he would have started his preaching career around somewhere when he was in his 20s, but he would have probably preached into his 50s. So that sermon would have been preached somewhere between the 200 to 220 A.D., so it's literally 1,800 years old. And to give you perspective, when Origen was born, he would have been alive. He could have very easily been alive at the same time as someone who would have been born around the birth, you know, would have been born around the time that John the Apostle was still alive. I mean, the one guy would have been a baby, and then he would have been like a 90-year-old man with Origen. But that just, he's literally living within a lifetime of the apostles.
Right. Wow. That's amazing. I mean, that'd be like your great grandparent, you know, whenever you're born, maybe your grandparents in their 50s, maybe your great grandparents in their 90s. So that kind of puts in some perspective there too. Wow. And yeah. I think I actually listened to that particular installment that you did. And yeah, just like all those sermons, they still hold some relevance.
That's what's crazy and kind of surprising. It sounds like it should be a show that's kind of a history scholarly buff kind of thing, but it ends up being much more, I think, of a personal spiritual growth show, because these sermons, even though they're 1,800 years old or 500 years old or, you know, 80 to 100 years old or whatever age they are, the truth that is being preached from the pulpit to the congregation is still truth that I feel like we need to hear. I can't tell you how many times I'll be reading or editing a sermon. I'll look at my wife and I'll be like, you could say this in church today and you would not have a clue that this was coming from someone who lived in a completely different continent and a completely different time before the inventions we have today or any of that stuff. You would never know it because the truth is just so the same. It didn't change. But on the other hand, these preachers also do something that I think we've lost a lot of in today's age. And that is, they are very, very bold. They do not compromise. They do not usually tend to be nice in their words. They can have flowery language and they can be very eloquent, but they tend to be very just precise. And they go right after their congregation, and they just have a way of telling them the truth. John Newton's the sermon that he released. That he preached right before he released the song Amazing Grace. And I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head, but it actually wasn't called Amazing Grace at the time. It was a much more long and confusing name. But he, it was all preached out of 1 Chronicles 17. So he based the song Amazing Grace from 1 Chronicles 17 and the sermon right before it based on this. And he preaches a sermon. The whole sermon is about grace and looking at where David was coming from, where David was, and where David was headed. It was a great sermon. But he just ends it with this line where he's like, and some of you don't know God, and the axe is coming to cut down the trees, and you will be cut down and thrown into the fire. And it's just such a, like, that's not what you think of when you associate Amazing Grace. You don't think of an axe coming down to chop you into the fire. But that's just how these guys were. They told the truth, and they inspired the fear of God.
Yeah, that kind of harsh, blunt, I don't say doom and gloom, but it is true. Without Jesus, that's your future.
that's what I think has really amazed me about them, is that I feel like we tend to put Jesus and God into very nice terms, and we tend to overly focus on the grace of God. The way these people preach, you know, we have a sermon coming out tomorrow, and it's on. And so probably when your listener hears it, it'll probably be out by McChain, and Robert Marie McChain, and he just had people described listening to him preaching as like the room was dead silent. People were gasping, like they were just losing their breath listening to him, because he just inspired such fear of God and such a guilt-ridden conscience that people felt they had to turn to God. Like there was no choice. They said listening to him preach made me. Said one guy said, "I listening to him preach made me almost want to go to hell. I was so afraid of the presence of a living God who felt like he was in the room convicting me in that moment." And you would never hear a pastor today described in those terms. And I'm not attacking churches today. It's not the church today is bad kind of lesson. I think it's interesting. I think it's something we may have lost that perspective on God a little bit. And I think these sermons kind of help bring it back to our forefront. And it's not just that these guys are scary. They have amazing way with words. Christmas Evans preached the most like beautiful illustrative look at the cross I've ever heard. And then John Calvin just brought truths out that these guys are just really good. And there's a reason they survived history and that they are the best. And most of these guys are theologians that people read today. So we read their books, but we don't read how to apply their theology, which is in their sermons.
Now, of course, there's all kinds of, you know, well-known preachers, like I said, John Calvin and others. How do you go about finding some of the more obscure people that you have?
That is one of my favorite parts of the show. Sometimes it happens kind of by accident, if I'm honest. I literally have a sermon that's currently being worked on, and he just happened to have the same name as another guy. He was from the same city, and they were living at the same time, but they were completely different guys. And one guy went to India, and this guy went to Australia, and I ended up with the sermon from the guy from Australia, and I could never find the sermon from the guy from India. So sometimes it's literally by accident. You're just researching, and you end up in a weird place in like a online library, and you're like, whoa, this sermon's pretty neat. It's really good stuff. I like it. Let's roll with it. Other times, it's intentional. Sometimes we get recommendations from listeners. Hey, have you heard? I can't tell you. There are lots of people that I had never heard of that our listeners have sent our way. Sometimes I spend a lot of time looking for missionary sermons, and so I find obscure people kind of that way. Just, I really want to I think some of the best preachers that ever lived would have to be missionaries, because they brought people to Christ in a different language than their, you know, native tongue. And there must have been tons of work put into it. So they would have to be some of the best preachers. So I spent a lot of time really digging through looking for them, but they're very hard, because most of our missionaries, you know, nobody was writing down their work. It wasn't, you know, they weren't going to the newspapers and stuff, because they lived in places where that wasn't even a thing. So they're the toughest ones to find. But when I do find them, I'm very excited. And other people, it's just, you know, and sometimes we pick the famous people that you expect. You have Charles Spurgeon. You have Sinners in the Hands of an Angry God by Jonathan Edwards. You have sermons that you would kind of expect to be in the catalog. But we do try to surprise people with things that you wouldn't necessarily expect. Sermons by Samuel Cooper, a Revolutionary War leader, or Jonathan Swift. Most people don't even realize that the famous satirist even used to preach. People that are just kind of, what's that?
So I didn't.
Yeah, no, he was actually a very devout Christian. He was the dean of like St. Patrick's School or something or another. He's an Anglican. That was literally his full-time gig, but most people don't even it's not even on their radar that that was what he did. So he has some sermons. They're all pretty interesting. And it's just something that's kind of forgotten about this guy. And that's a lot of them too. Like, so many of these people have just been historically forgotten because they're just, I don't know what it is. They're not a priority, or what history has just kind of left them by the side, which I think is ridiculous, because we have all these pagan poets and you can find all these obscure texts from like Mesopotamia translated, but you don't have the sermons by John Huss translated, and you don't have the sermons by Andrew Fuller finished. It's just crazy to me how history has kind of just left these guys by the wayside. But that's one of our goals, is to try to bring them back and be like, no, like, you need to hear these sermons. These sermons are relevant to your life now. They're fantastic. And quite frankly, they're probably better than most of the preachers alive today.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't found one yet that I've listened to that you guys have had that have been, you know, so-so. I mean, they've all been really good.
Yeah.
Now, when it comes to the historical part, is that where you start, is just digging through history, or?
It's both. We'll dig through names and people we hear recommended to us, and then we'll also, sometimes we will start from the history side, and sometimes I start from just kind of a perspective of like, okay, what are famous people that were living, you know, Christians that were living in this place? And I just kind of dig through until I get some names. It really, every sermon kind of comes to us differently. George Matheson, his sermon, The Patience of Job, was preached to the Queen of England, Queen Victoria, and she loved it so much she had it put in her private library. They published it to all of England, and it went out everywhere, and everyone read it. And then, of course, 130 years later, it had been completely forgotten, and the only copy left was one that had been pulled from Queen Victoria's private library, stuck in a library, and was basically on a bookshelf, forgotten. We messaged them, we asked them, hey, can we get that sermon? And now that sermon's available to read online for the first time in history, and you can listen to it too. That sermon was recommended to us by somebody, by Joel, my co-host's wife. She had been like, hey, I read this guy was a preacher. He's also a hymn writer. And we were like, cool. So sometimes it just comes to us like that. It really, I don't know. It's kind of fun. Each episode, each researching it, and each sermon just kind of comes along in a different way. And I love to see how it happens. And again, sometimes we get a lot of help. Sometimes we find it completely on our own, and sometimes it's just, it's one you'd expect that's already kind of out there that everyone already knows about. We kind of let the Lord lead it to us, I guess.
Now how much time do you put into, you know, preparing for a podcast? I'm sure it varies.
Too much time. No sermon takes less than an hour to edit. Every sermon that we take, we edit them and kind of get them fixed up. You know, they're sometimes written in Old English, and you know, from the 1500s, and if you've ever read a sermon if you've ever read anything by a Puritan, you know that they literally hate periods, and they'll go pages without using anything but semicolons and dashes, and that's very difficult for our sermon readers to read, and that's very difficult for you as an audience to understand. So the first thing we do is we take the sermons and we edit them up, give them kind of a modern feeling where the message stays the same, and the words are the only part that change. You know, we try to do it like you would with the Bible, which is we want to take the meaning, and we want to take as much of it and leave it as much of it as possible as we can intact. But we do have to change some stuff so that it's listenable and it doesn't just feel like something that's archaic and not understandable. And so that takes at least an hour. But if it's, you know, if it's a Puritan, if it's a kind of a long-winded guy, John Knox took me like 5 hours. Some of these guys take forever in a day. Some of them, it is not impossible for me to spend a couple hours every night for several days just working through a sermon and getting it fixed up. And usually they come to us a little bit longer, so I'll cut portions that are just not relevant to the listener. And sometimes too, if I'm honest, I got to correctly clean up a few of these gentlemen here and there because some of them are preaching and speaking like their times. We try to mention that in the episode in our history portion too. With every episode, we also do the backstory of these preachers, and that's usually 10 to 15 minutes. And we'll give you details about their life that we think are relevant, tell you a little bit how about who they are, where they came from, things like that. And so we also will tell you controversies that they're involved in. Joel and I, our goal is to be neutral and to kind of come off as just, here's the story. We always say, let the audience figure it out for themselves. So we really want the audience to just decide, do I like this guy or not? That's on you, not on us. So we put people in the show that we necessarily wouldn't agree with them 100%. And we don't know that they're the best people, but their sermon is really good, and we want the audience to tell us what they think and what they feel about it. We trust them to do that. But so sometimes they have a, you know, racy language or stuff that I clean up a bit, just because we live in 2020, not 1880. And I want to make sure that that's not, I don't want people to be distracted by that and not hear the message. But if we do that, we tend to tell you like, hey, this guy had a little issues here and there. You should, you know, keep that in mind as you look into him. But that's actually, you would think editing these sermons from like 500 years ago, that this would be a pretty common problem. It only actually happens here and there that we actually have to do that part of it. Most of the editing is just, this is not relevant at all. It, you know, made sense in the 1800s, doesn't make sense now. Or it's just, this is a really long sermon and nobody needs to hear this part, so we're just going to trim it up here and there. Again, yeah, especially
the Puritans. 5 hours is a long sermon. I one thing I knew about Charles Spurgeon is that he would manuscript his sermons out, but whenever he delivered them, he himself didn't read the whole thing. He would kind of use it as a guide and modify it as needed and to meet his audience, I guess.
Yeah. No, and some of these guys tend to meander, which your audience might be thinking, you tend to meander. I get it. But some of these guys, they definitely wander in their words for a while. And they'll even come back and they're like, but back to my point. You're like, you just spent like 8 pages not on your point.
Doing a podcast, conversational style is what we do on Quest for Truth. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we meander and go down bunny trails.
Yeah.
We try to get back on point. It's one thing to do that in audio, but if you're going to actually put ink on paper and put those words down,
yes, you need to cut some of that out.
You think they would edit a little bit?
They really didn't edit much, though, from what I can tell. And if this is them edited, my goodness. But so that's the one portion of the show. The other portion of the show is each sermon is spoken by a different speaker. So we're constantly working through, interacting with people, getting new speakers to come in and volunteer. All of them are volunteers. We don't make any kind of money that we could pay anybody, so it has to all be done by volunteers. And we've already done 50 sermons, and we have a new sermon out every week, and we're scheduling out. So blessedly by the Lord, he's been giving us the volunteers we need. At one point we did run out and we had to take a month off. That was a bummer, but we haven't come anywhere close to that recently, so that's been great. And so God has been blessing us that, so we have to be in connection with all these different people, from podcasts to radio hosts to theologians, the Gospel Coalition writers, all kinds of people are helping us out with that side of things. And then every episode we do the backstory of these guys, and doing the research, we really try to do more than just read the Wikipedia to you. So we do a lot of reading and writing and reading their own primary sources and stuff. We really want to give a good job to each of these preachers because we think they deserve it, and we think the backstory is really important. So that usually takes another hour or two at least to get the scripts ready for that. Then Joel and I do the recordings. Joel does the editing, which takes him, he said, usually about 2 hours to edit. And then we publish it. Then we do things like interviews, and we do marketing and publishing, all that stuff. It's a lot of work to do, but we do enjoy it. It's a lot of fun. And people have really been responding to it. People have been really enjoying it. We get, several messages all the time saying just, wow, I love that sermon. Or, wow, I'm so glad I found your show. I've been looking for something just like this, and I didn't know it. So it can be a lot of work. It takes a lot of time, but the response from people and the way these sermons are just moving in people's lives makes it worth it to me.
Yeah. And I mean, besides the sermon content, you like the historical side of it too, which I would imagine that takes up a lot of more research than what your 15 minutes.
What makes it into the actual backstory is not all that we obviously do the reading of. It's a process, but it is very enjoyable. I have found so many heroes of the faith that I would have never even heard of half these guys. I went to Bible college. I thought I was very, educated, and researching these guys and stuff really challenged me and made me realize just how little of church history I learned and I have learned. And I'm constantly like, how did I not know about this guy before now? Even famous people that I thought I knew well, like Jonathan Edwards and Spurgeon and Scofield and all these other kind of guys, I thought I knew their stories, and doing research and backstories, I was like, I had no idea actually about this guy at all, apparently. I eat so many things about his life that are just basic that I just did not know. Classic example for me was Hudson Taylor, well known for going to China, but when he arrived in China was the beginning of the Taiping Rebellion, which is the fourth bloodiest event in human history. It was all centered in Shanghai, Hangzhou, Suzhou, which is the region he had landed in and was in when he got there, pretty much on fire. And at one point, a cannonball literally almost took off his head while he was preaching. In fact, he picked up the cannonball and sent it home to his mom and basically was like, "Hey, mom, while I was preaching, this cannonball flew right over my head and almost killed me. So I thought we'd keep it as a family souvenir." And there's just all these, you know, and he got mugged while he was in China, and all these kind of crazy stories happened to him. Didn't know any of that. And that's just Hudson Taylor. That's a big name, let alone all these little names, like, or not, they're not little, they're very important, but we just don't know their stories as well. Like Christopher Love and his maybe plot to take over England, or Andrew Gray, who got locked in his attic and his dad wouldn't let him go to church because he didn't like how he was changing when he became a Christian. Just all these little things that are little, but they're not, they're important. And their stories, I don't, they encourage me, they inspire me, and they help me take my faith more seriously.
Yeah, and yeah, just those historical snapshots are just, like I said, they just add quite a bit to it. I really do enjoy those. In fact, I've been doing my own picking up on some history lately that surely not as in-depth as what you're doing. But any kind of time you research some of these old-timey characters, definitely gives you a better appreciation for their life and their times.
Absolutely. And I really come to appreciate the diversity of, like, the different people that God uses. You know, we always think of, like, the bulldogs that are always fighting for the truth and they're kind of mean and tough as nails, but God really used a lot of different people to do a lot of different things. There were poets, hymn writers, there are kind of quiet, studious academics, there are men who were on the front lines of wars, there were men who were starting all these orphanages and ministries, and then there are other men who just like to preach, like Alexander McLaren. He's like, "I'm just really a preacher, I can't do much else." You know, there are people who are kind of halfway doctors or missionary, all these different personalities and people, and yet God uses all of them to do his work. And it's really made me appreciate, like, I don't have to be, you know, like these people or that people. I can just be who God has made me to be, because God has so many different types of people he uses in his kingdom. He'll use you too. You don't have to try to become somebody else, if that makes sense.
And, you know, and sometimes those personality flaws will resonate. You know, there's preachers who have had depression and other just things go wrong, and yet they've been out there, you know, serving, and that can still be an inspiration for people today.
I think so, absolutely. Charles Spurgeon, you know, famously wrestled with depression, and yet I always try to flip it and be like, this guy who struggles with depression, he should have been, you know, many people would say, oh, there's not much he can do. And yet he became the prince of preachers and one of the most famous preachers, famous revival men of all time. But yet he had this huge struggle on him. And if you struggle with depression, that, you know, don't want to say this, it's obviously a very serious matter, but also you have somebody you can look up to. This guy, I mean, Spurgeon alone probably did more for the church than maybe more than 90% of the preachers we have on our show did. And yet he would have had this thing that would have been, you know, quote, a handicap or something, but he didn't see it that way. It didn't work out that way. And so I think it's very hopeful and inspiring that I don't look at it as, oh, wow, can you believe Spurgeon suffered depression? I look at it as, like, this guy who should have been counted out did all this for the kingdom. Look at what you can do too.
And I think it's been on your show. You talked about back in the day that the preachers used to also write their own songs and sing their own songs.
Right? Absolutely. Yeah, we have several. I mean, just so many of the famous preachers that you think of were also hymn writers. George Whitefield wrote Hark the Herald Angels Sing. George Matheson wrote A Love That Never Fails. Martin Luther wrote Mighty Fortress Is Our God. So many of these guys that you think of them for their theology textbooks today, but you probably have sung their songs in church and not even realize. Again, John Newton, obviously, Amazing Grace. You know, they write these really incredible songs, and it kind of makes sense. Back then, they didn't have a radio, so they couldn't, like, flip on K-Love and be like, "Hey, worship band, what's new?" If you wanted a new song, you kind of had to make it yourself. But I also think there's just this kind of heart that they had for God, that they were connecting with God. And I really think it's something we need to get back to in our seminaries and our Bible colleges and our studies, is reminding that our students that, hey, we need to also be connecting to God in this artistic, poetic, you know, loving, songish way, if that makes sense. Like, it can't just be that you have all the right answers. You need to feel that and express that. And I think some way too that that really matters. And I do think it's that so many of the preachers wrote songs. I do think it's something that we need to go back into thinking about again and going, wait a second, what's going on that none of our preachers today write songs, but all the preachers of the past used to?
The funny thing, sort of for me at least, besides the Quest for Truth, I have another podcast that I do, I mention once in a while. And just for to do something different than writing show notes, what I've done is use poetry. Mm-hmm. That if you dig through or you look for some of my tags on some of the entries for poetry, there'll be some that pop up where I've written in the whole show note in the style of a sonnet or the style mm-hmm. of haiku. And it's just fun, and it stretches your mind a little bit as you write these things.
Yeah.
Does that happen with some of these people? They help them, to stretch their mind over topics.
I think so. I think we've lost something in that ability to, I've come to appreciate poetry and stuff like that more. You know, if you'd asked me 8 years ago, what about a poetry? Whatever, right? But John Bunyan was this great writer. John Milton, Paradise Lost, great poetry. And I've kind of really come to appreciate, okay, poetry isn't just like some artsy thing that people do in college. And it's, it's for the majors that aren't going anywhere, which is how I viewed it for a long time. It's actually what it's done properly. It's very intellectual, and it's emotional, and it's very well done. I think for the longest time, I had just been exposed to bad poetry, and so I just assumed that was all poetry, and that's just not true. There's a lot of, again, John Milton's Paradise Lost alone makes poetry worth it in my mind, but there is something to learning to craft your words in a way that they sound good, they express well, and they matter, and I think that that these preachers practice that. They use that probably for their sermons and other places, and I think also just as a way of expressing themselves to God and their love for God and their appreciation for God. And you can do that through music, and you just can't just always do that through, a theological treatise. And and that's something too in our show, I think, that we've kind of come over time, is that so many of these preachers have just been relegated to their contributions to theology. And it's like, okay, they were theologians. That is absolutely part of who they were, but that's one part of who they were, and we've historically just forgotten the rest of them, the personal story of who they were, the sermons that they were preaching, and just we've just relegated them to a almost like a footnote in a theological systematic theology kind of thing. And it's like, that's one part of who they were, but it wasn't the whole story. And you lose a lot, I think, by just taking their intellectual contributions and dropping everything else from them.
And of course and you've mentioned it, I really do enjoy that you do have different people who actually read the sermons. It actually adds something extra, because it's just not your voice or Joel's voice. And
we didn't think anybody would want to listen to that show. I'm sure people already are like,
I think it would work if you would, but having an outside person to contribute, mm-hmm. I think that's the actual, extra touch.
Our goal was to kind of, we really wanted you to feel like you were stepping into the church. And we really, as much as humanly possible, wanted you to feel like you were in the shoes of the congregation at that time. And so the whole show is designed to give you the history, tell you this guy's story, and then we fade out and fades in this voice that you've never heard before. And it's supposed to just kind of feel like it's the voice of that preacher coming to you. I mean, obviously, it's not. But that was the goal, is just, that's why we even wrestled with, should we thank the speaker for the episode before the sermon or after the sermon? I was like, no, it needs to come afterwards, because we just spent all this time talking about George Whitfield or, whoever it is, J. Gresham Machen. I don't want us to suddenly bring a new name into this. I want this to feel like J. Gresham Machen until the end. I want that just to, as much as sometimes our speakers even speak from a pulpit in a church, and I always love when they do that, because they get a little reverb in the room, and you feel like you're at church, and that's the goal. And
I was going to mention it. I think one of the first episodes I listened to was one that was done by D.L. Moody, And yeah. You got the guy you had speaking that was at like the same location where this train depot was at or something.
Yeah.
And you did get that, you know, resonant, that feel of being there.
Yeah. That D.L. Moody sermon, we didn't know it. We live in Kansas City. And the last sermon that D.L. Moody ever preached was done in Kansas City at this place called the Old Convention Center. Well, it's gone now. It's a field and a park next to a convention center now, but Joel and I went on the location. We walked around at night and we just kind of talked about how this park that nobody remembers once the center of a huge, I want to say it was 8,000 person revival, and people had packed out the house to hear D.L. Moody speak for a week. And if he hadn't gotten sick, he would have, you know, stayed the whole 5 days. But on the fourth day, he got really sick. They had to take him home. He had to kind of wrap up his tour. And it was the last place anybody, you know, he would ever publicly preach. But at the same time, it was this incredible, I don't know, it was this incredible feeling of just this final resting place and stuff. And there's no signs. There's no, oh, this is where D.L. Moody preached his last sermon. You have, no, I mean, I've been to that park before. People about it who live in Kansas, they go, no way, I never knew that. No one knows that because it's been forgotten. And that's one of the themes of our show, is just so many of these people have just been completely forgotten, but they're still important. They still matter. It's still there.
It'd be interesting to petition the city to put up a plaque.
Right. Yeah, there's a bunch of plaques for different people that are in that park that did this or that. And I'm like, I'd really like to get a big old D.L. Moody's last sermon here. And people go, who's that? But I still think it'd be something important. And really, the saddest story, it was the very first sermon we ever did was by George Mueller. And during the research portion of the show, I read this blog article by this guy. He was a big, you know, George Mueller fan. He happened to be in the area. He was on vacation, so he goes over to visit him, visit the orphanage and stuff. And it's a school or something now. And goes up to them. Is like, hey, I'm just here to learn about George Mueller. And the woman goes, oh, okay, hold on a second. Kind of tells him to go sit at a table. And she comes back with a cardboard box of a few memorabilia items. And she's like, just put them back when you're done. And that's it. That's wow. All that's left of George Mueller at his own institution, 100, right. You know, 20 years, 30 years after he dies.
And as I recall, with George Mueller, is he was kind of best known for this orphanage, and he literally would raise millions and millions of dollars, but he poured it all into this orphanage, and he subsisted on like almost poverty level income.
He literally never asked for money. That was the saying, I will never ask for money and I won't take a wage. And he just trusted God for everything. And there's these incredible, wild stories of God providing for him, and just these fascinating, mind-blowing ways where, you know, milk trucks would break down when they needed it. And so just these incredible things where food would just come when they needed it. Yeah. And that was George Mueller's story. And he's the father of modern orphanages. Whether you're a Christian or not, he should be remembered, because before him, children just ran through the streets, basically. And he put, say, over 10,000 kids would end up in orphanages just during his lifetime. And afterwards, his models, you know, are literally used around the world. He completely changed the game. Again, whether you're Christian or secular, he's an important person. And he's been left to a cardboard box in the own orphanage that he founded. And again, D.L. Moody, there's no sign for him. There's no remembering that he was there. I lived in Hangzhou. There's no, I mean, obviously it's a communist country, so they're not going to have signs to Christians, but there's no memory that Hudson Taylor was there doing his job for 20 years there. These guys, you know, I also remember driving by in Savannah and I saw Whitfield's orphanage, whatever. I think it's like Beth something, Beth Bridge, Bethany. Anyway, it's got like, I had no idea at the time that that was Whitfield's former school orphanage either. I had no idea about any of these things. There's no signs to remember them. But I always say, you know what? Well, we don't remember, God does remember. But at the same time, as a church, if we could try to remember these things, it might help us a lot. We might not be so caught up in the day-to-day issues of Christianity and so stressed out and frenzied and panicked and always concerned about everything going on. I think we'd have a little peace with each other if we remembered all the things the church has already been through. And I think we'd have a lot more courage if we realized that the stuff we're doing today is actually pretty small potatoes compared to what our forefathers in the faith have done. And actually, we're living pretty blessed when we put ourselves in their perspective. I mean, right now, you and I are living during this, you know, novel coronavirus, and I am not trying to downplay it. And that's not my goal. But I'm just saying, when you read about John Cliff living through the Black Plague,
and J.C. Ryle living through a yellow fever epidemic, and Martin Luther and the Black Plague, Charles Spurgeon, and there's almost no preachers that I've read about that haven't gone through some kind of pandemic. You go, okay, you know, this is just a normal part of life for Christians and the church, and this is
and
what.
And if anyone of those would be around today, they'd be getting condemned for putting people in danger.
Yeah. Well, and every single one of those guys, they were on the front lines. Martin Luther turned his own house into a hospital. John Wycliffe, he was burying the bodies because he was the only priest in town, and 2/3 of his village died, and who was going to bury them but him, right? So he had them, they would come into his house, and they would die, and they would be his friends and family, and people that he knew, and people that he was taking care of, and they were just dying left and right. Jonathan Edwards, he literally took a vaccine to try to help calm people down about the yellow fever. Now, he was kind of an old man and actually ended up killing him, but, you know, he was putting himself on the front line of danger to try to help people out. J.C. Ryle went from home to home forcing people to drink tea because they weren't getting enough fluids during his outbreak, and so he was like, I got to do this. I could get in their homes and make them drink fluids because if they don't, they will dehydrate. And so that's what he spent his time doing. And it's just, when you put it in perspective, you go, okay, you know, we're going to be okay. This is not so – I walked away and went, all right, this is not so bad. We're going to be all right. Compared to what these dudes were going through, this could certainly be a while. And, again, I'm not trying to make it downplay. I'm just trying to say, let's put it in perspective.
You know, and it'd be interesting if we had well-known preachers today stepping up and, you know, if not personally doing something, at least forwarding a ministry to help with that. I think some churches who can, you know, they have food pantries and they have, you know, outreaches to people who are shut in or otherwise, you know, staying at home. But yeah, there's still some of that going on today.
Oh yeah. I'm not downplaying at all either. I'm not trying to discredit. I just think because we've forgotten the history and the stories of these people, that to a degree we've forgotten our duties, if that makes sense. Like, we kind of, because we have so little perspective on history and who we are and where the church comes from, that we feel frightened of things. That I think if we knew a little bit more about who came before us and what they did during the same situations, we would be a little scared, and we go, okay, I know what I'm supposed to do because I remember what the church has always done during this time. But we don't have that perspective on history. I remember talking with a friend of mine, and we're talking about George Whitefield, and I mentioned some stuff about it, and I was like, and you know, he did have this issue with slavery and racism and stuff. We talked a little bit about that. My friend goes, you know, I'm really glad you brought that up because most people don't even want to talk about the fact that Whitefield had all these issues with race. And I go, that's true, I said, but I think most people don't know that he ran an orphanage, or most people know diddly squat about who he is. Like, most people just don't know the good or the bad. Most Christians don't, you know, don't remember anything about history. I was the same way. Let me tell you, before I started doing these sermons, I thought I knew a lot about church history, and I realized I don't barely even know a drop in the bucket of our story of how we got to be who we are. So this is not me attacking us as we're all dumb. I'm saying, like, we all need to work on this. This is something that I realized I have to work on. I think we all need to come together and work on more, because we are a part of a great, like, story of God moving through history and telling people about the name of Christ. But if you only look at your 5 minutes in that story, it's going to look a lot scarier. And if you can see the whole story, you go, oh, okay, this is actually not so bad. I'm just one, you know, one stepping stone on a long journey. And actually, my stepping stone is pretty comfortable compared to a lot of the other stepping stones that came before me. And so this isn't so bad.
Well, you mentioned church history. Now, just out of curiosity, what is your religion denomination that you?
I don't know. That it's kind of hard to put that into words.
I only ask that because you know, I'm from, you know, Baptist, you know, specifically Southern Baptist, and being in a denomination that's structured that way, they don't really ever teach church history. They whip out the Sunday School Quarterly, you read the Bible, you read the application, and you don't learn about where we came from in church history. And there's a lot of heresies that are currently out there that people think are the brand new thing, but they've been around since origin.
Yeah, exactly. No, and that's I was raised in a Southern Baptist church, and that was the same thing for me, where I thought I knew all this stuff. And then I went to Bible college and I took church history class. I thought, okay, I really know all this stuff. It's the same thing where it's like, I really thought I knew church history very well. And that was because I had taken classes or heard kind of very broad scopes of history. You know what I mean? Where we'll talk about the 1500s today and the 1600s tomorrow. And you get this like 32,000, you know, feet in the air overlook on it. And then you think, okay, I understand this. I got this. No big deal. When in reality, that's not how it works. You know, that's not really how you learn this stuff, in my opinion. You've got to get in there and learn the details and learn the people that make up the story, because without the people, you really don't understand what's going on in history at all. And you're missing so much. And you know what? You may get a bit of a biased opinion. You may not even know the real story. This could be legend, but at least you have a better idea of what's going on. You have a better idea of the lessons from the history than if you don't. I'm the same way where we in America and we in the West, I think in modern Christianity, forgets its past really bad. And we tend to look back down on the people behind us like, oh, they were backwards because they believe this or they believe that, and we're, you know, they're behind the times and stuff like that. When in reality, these people were surviving wars, they were surviving plagues, they were setting up orphanages, they were doing all this, you know, when they were missionaries, they were going into jungles and they were literally taking, you know, several month boat rides to land in countries that there was no English translation apps. And these guys were doing things that I just don't think today we could do. And likewise, I'm sure there are things we can do today that would be hard for them. I just think we get a better appreciation for history for our faith, when we understand our history a little bit better. And it's also great too, because we have the Bible, we have the Word of God, but we've also been surrounded by a great cloud of witnesses. We have those who are alive today, but I think it's also great because we have those who came before us and we can learn their stories. I really think God uses them to inspire us to live better. I've talked with so many people. I myself have been encouraged. My co-host Joel has been encouraged. We're just reading about these men and talking about these men has made us go, I need to be better at my faith because I'm clearly not living up to the standard of these guys. But if I only compare them myself to the standard of my age and my time, I don't look so bad. But when I compare myself to these great, you know, heroes of the faith, I go, okay, like I could really actually, I got a lot more to measure up to here.
That is a good point. And I think that's, you know, why I've been enjoying your podcast so much. And I don't want to keep you all day here.
Yeah. I definitely talk all day. So.
Yeah. Well, we're talking about theology and history. We could probably make this a 7-hour podcast.
Yeah, right. And that is one thing I will say. Joel and I don't tend to delve into the theological side of things too much. We let the audience decide it for themselves. We'll occasionally bring up the person's theology if it's important, but Joel and I consider ourselves much more historians than theologians, so we do try to let the audience kind of work it out for themselves, because we really didn't want the show to just be one narrow slice of, you know, only Baptist preachers or only the Reformed preachers or only, you know, whatever our theological persuasion would be as preachers. We really didn't want that, because that would end up still being the same problem where you're just getting one narrow look at all these sermons. And I think most people would agree that it works really well as it is, where you're getting people who, if you put them in the same room, theologically, they would not agree, but their sermons are still full of truth. And it's not that the show is ecumenical. We do believe that, you know, people who are not trusting the Word of God, we don't tend to let them in. But, there's a uniting factor in seeing all these people from different walks of faith who started different denominations who are just completely different, yet they're united around the same central gospel. Right. And it's very encouraging.
I know you're talking about multicultural or whatever here of the faith. I know there are some pretty good theologians out there who look back and see the good in Calvin, they see the good in Wesley, they see the good in these other people, and clearly a Wesleyan is not a Calvinist and vice versa. And yeah, you let their sermons speak for themselves and people can pick out what's good or not. And something else in a recent, maybe it was not so recent, you did one on a really early theologian, and you're like, we don't really agree with what he says. Given he was like in the second or third century or some early time frame, it's like, you know, the apologetic of that time was not so much about defending the faith. It was Christianity is not quite legal yet. And so don't kill us.
Yeah.
I believe that was Origen, and he said some things that I'm like, you know, I wouldn't have done that. I wouldn't have agreed with that. But you know what? I wasn't alive under Roman persecution, dealing with Gnostic philosophers and being chased by Judaizers. So it's a little privilege, you know, a little privilege, as people like to use that phrase. It's a little nice of me to say, well, I wouldn't have believed that about the Bible. Yeah, I also didn't have my life on the line. I didn't have my dad martyred in front of me. I didn't keep myself from being martyred because my mom hid my clothes and I didn't want to go get martyred naked, which is what happened to him. So I go, and I didn't go work under philosophers who disagree with me 100% so that I could make better arguments for the faith. And I didn't write the first Old Testament commentary. So, you know, it's a little easy to look back in history and snipe somebody and say, oh, you know, he did this. I don't like him. It's a lot harder to put yourself in their shoes and go, and how would you have done in that same situation?
Right.
Maybe he, you know, maybe Origen, maybe Johann Tauler, maybe some of these guys aren't perfect theologians. Maybe they weren't even perfect men and perfect preachers. But if you put yourself in their shoes, at Schofield, we did that. We said, you look, yeah, he was a corrupt politician, but he lived in the Wild West under a corrupt administration, dealing with really tough times. He was a Civil War vet, and he still was called back in. I mean, we'll see how you do dealing with all of that. I imagine it would be tough, and maybe you would do better, but I think even if you did better, you'd probably empathize with where these guys are coming from. Like, it's not
easy. Oh, yeah. Yeah, you just kind of lay it out there and let the listener pick and choose, decide on their own. So,
yeah.
Well, I think we'll let you go.
Okay.
Talk for a while, but it's just been really great to chat with you about this. And
yeah,
I think our listeners will also enjoy that. And if they haven't listened to your podcast yet, why don't you share how people can find you, find the podcast, social medias, all that stuff.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on, Keith. I really appreciate it. And for you invited me on, which is fantastic. Revive Thoughts is the name of the show. And we can be found on Spotify. We can be found on any podcast player, Apple Podcasts, all of those places. We also have a website, revivethoughts.com. We have a Patreon if you like what we're doing and you want to send us a few dollars. We do have behind the scenes shows and deep dives and stuff like that. We did a deep dive on the Salem witch trials where we did, I think, the most research that any Christian has ever done on the Salem witch trials. Really delved in there, really took seriously the idea of demonic influence and stuff like that. And we weren't chasing demons around every corner, but we wrestled with, if you were a Puritan in that time and you believed this was true, what would you do? And we really try to answer that question, not from a secular historian who immediately just goes, there's no such thing as demons, so I'm going to wipe it out. But as a Christian who believes the Bible is true and recognize that Jesus was casting out demons, what do you do? We also have, we're releasing a new show soon that we're very excited about. So keep an eye out for that. It's going to be very, I think maybe even out by the time the show airs. It's called Revive Devos, where we're taking devotionals from history. Most of these great theologians also wrote devotionals. And so we're taking 2 or 3 minutes, and every single morning, a couple different theologians you'll be able to listen to their thoughts. And we're really excited about that. That should be out here in the next week or two. And so by the time this airs, it probably will be out. And we just really hope that you guys will enjoy the show. If you have a great voice, or people tell you, yeah, you speak really well, you should do radio or something like that, let us know. We'd love to have you preach a sermon for us. A lot of the people we have come on are complete rookies. They've never recorded anything before, and yet they've recorded a sermon from history, and it turned out great. So we love having people on that would like to help bring their passionate voices to these speakers. Other than that, we really just appreciate having listeners come on and find us. And every time, just this morning, I got an email from somebody, I found your show because someone interviewed you, and it was really awesome. And that's the thing. We love that people are hearing these sermons, that people are finding our show, and that it's having an impact on their spiritual lives. That's the most crazy thing, is that these sermons that were sitting in books are now getting to just breathe the second life, and they're bringing new spiritual life and growth to people all over again. It's really cool.
All right. Well, and again, thanks. And thanks for taking time to talk to me.
Thank you, Keith. Have a great day.
Yep.
My name is Andy Olson, and I want to tell you about Echozoi Radio. Echozoi Radio is a podcast outreach of Echozoi Ministries. Every month, I find a knowledgeable guest to talk about an important and interesting topic that affects the church today. We carefully balance the discussions of positive, God-glorifying doctrines of Orthodox Christianity from a mostly Reformed point of view with exposés of heresy, false teaching, and poor practice that goes on throughout the church today. You can find us at echozoe.com. That's echozoe.com.
Another fellow podcaster on the Christian Podcast Community, christianpodcastcommunity.org. And hey, that's all I have for this show. Should be on schedule next week for our Luke audio drama. It should be a fun one. It will be a little bit longer. I have all the parts in. I have all the stuff processed. And I thought it would be our time frame of we shoot for 10 minutes, but it will be just a little longer than normal. But well, I didn't know how to do it any differently. So look for that coming up. And I have more interviews in the works. So stay tuned. Tell a friend about us. And thanks for listening.
Visit life-truth.com, where you can find all our shows. Leave a message or call our voicemail number at 401-753-4844. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/lifetruthpage. Follow us on Twitter at HPNcast, at capital H, capital P, capital N, capital C, A-S-T. Everything Nathan Caldwell does can be found at facebook.com/protectors of the book. Music in the show is used by permission of Kevin Zerbe at zerbinator.wordpress.com. Thanks for listening.